from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're joined now by Matt Green and Ricky Gates. Matt Green has made it his mission to walk every street of New York City. And a documentary that's playing in the Bay Area is chronicling his journey. It's called The World Before Your Feet. Welcome, Matt Green.
Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by ultra runner Ricky Gates. He was inspired in part by Matt Green. And Ricky Gates has just finished running every single street in San Francisco. Welcome to you, Ricky Gates.
Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, I want to start with you, Matt Green, if I could. So you are walking all five boroughs of New York City, the equivalent, you think, of 8,000 miles.
Yeah, or I've walked over 9,000 now, and there's still more left.
I was going to ask you, what's your status
the estimate
now?
It keeps going up. Yeah.
Yes, so where
are you
at?
I'm very bad at estimating.
How far in are you?
Yeah, so I've walked about 9,100 miles, and I don't know, maybe there's 500 left, but I thought there were 500 or 1,000 left when I was at 8,000, so I'm obviously not good at that part of this.
Well, how long has this taken you so far?
7 years.
And that is a commitment.
It is a commitment. It's a good portion of my life at this point.
Why do you think the idea took hold of you so much that you're able to commit to it and stay with it for 7 years?
For one thing, I didn't know it was going to take 7 years when I started, so it seemed like less of a commitment at the beginning.
How long did you think it would take?
I was like, this will take 2, 2.5 years.
Oh, you're just a little bit off.
Yeah. Because, I didn't realize how much research I would start doing and how many answers I could find out about all these things that I was seeing. So I thought it was going to be like, I walk, and I post a few photos. And then over time, I just started getting more and more into, figuring out what the things I was seeing are. And so that's now become the majority of what I'm doing. And it's just really morphed and expanded over time.
Now, Ricky Gates, in your case, you are done with running the streets of San Francisco. Right?
Yeah. I am all done. I started on November 1st this past year, and I finished just a couple weeks ago, December 17th or so. I only had one day of cleanup blocks, as I'm calling them, and Matt, I think,
yeah,
you
that's
can attest
the
to this.
Where,
what was the, what
yeah,
the industry blocks?
Term? That's what we call it in the biz.
What is cleanup
so this
blocks?
This is when you think that you did all the streets in an area and you look at your map and realize that you missed a block or two and you have to go back there. Otherwise, you can't sleep at night.
So you set a goal to do this within a very specific time frame. So that meant how many miles a day?
I averaged about my shorter days were 10 to 15 miles, and that was kind of a recovery day. And then the longest day was 50 miles. And
50 miles.
Averaging about,
miles
in one day.
Averaging about 30 miles a day is the average.
So we should remind people that you are an ultra runner. You ran across the country.
Yeah, I ran across the country 2 years ago at this point. And if I'm not mistaken, Matt Green, you also went across the country.
I did, and I also went slower than you. I walked it.
Yeah, well, 152 days, is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We did it in exactly the same number of days.
Oh, nice.
That's amazing.
Awesome. That's so cool.
You walked it, and he ran it in exactly the same number of days. How does that happen?
I'm not sure, Matt Green. I'm not sure what route you took. I took a lot of trails along the way.
Oh,
and I was taking a lot of photographs and not the most direct route.
And
I also took a little bit of a river section in there. I went across Alabama and the Tennessee River for about 10 days,
nice.
Which was a lot of fun. But finished in San Francisco about a year and a half ago and kind of realized that I – in doing this long journey across the country that I got to know a very rural part of the country. And my desire was to get to know the country as a whole. And having lived in San Francisco on and off for several years, and just started contemplating the next logical step forward and decided I would do all of the streets in San Francisco. And that's when I started doing my research and came across Matt's project in New York and then a few others around the states that were really quite inspiring.
Yes. And so all told, you logged, I understand, 1,300 miles by running in San Francisco, running every street in San Francisco. Is that about right?
That's correct. I think 1,322 was my final number that I came up with, and and about 150,000 vertical feet of climbing.
Wow.
Yes, San Francisco.
Which was a bit astounding to me at
it's
the end.
It's very hilly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Definitely keeping that in mind.
Totally. And I'm reminded of that every day when I you start off at the base of Potrero Hill or Bernal Heights, and a 30-mile day all of a sudden becomes very immense when you're going up and down this 300 or 400-foot-tall hill 10 to 15 times over and over again.
You've said, Ricky, it's that you've lived here off and on. How did doing this change your relationship to the city?
In so many different ways. I haven't decided if it's something that I wish I'd have done right from the get-go from moving to San Francisco, or if it required being in the city for a few years to really appreciate that I have seen some of the city and wanted to see a whole lot more. But it changed my relationship in a lot of different ways, just kind of realizing how diverse the city is, how many kind of bubbles there are, how many bubbles there are within a single block at times. A lot of it, kind of one of the biggest things, was just kind of creating a lot of empathy within myself for how people live in the city. And this is everything from poverty to wealth and all different races and sexes. And it just became really fascinating to me to see the differences in such a small area, San Francisco being this 49-mile square cube.
Right. You did have this one post I'm reminded of in listening to you where you talked initially about how you were annoyed by graffiti before this, but then or earlier, but as you passed it by more and more, you started to see it as claiming space and it changed your perspective on it. I have a similar question for you, Matt Green. How has doing this walk changed your relationship to the city of New York?
Yeah. The cool thing about it is that, you know, you're obviously not just seeing the things that are spectacular that people would choose to go to when they go to a city. You know, you could come up with best of lists and top 10 lists and, like, you know, come up this great, exciting, action-packed itinerary. But you don't have that when you're walking every street. You're seeing everything that's there. And a lot of days you're walking through places where no one chooses to go in their free time. And what's interesting is that, you know, those days are exactly as fascinating as all the other days are, because you just start seeing the kind of mundane things. And as you start learning about what they are, you start making these connections with the city that are very intimate and very personal. And they relate to other things you saw on another day. And it starts making this like web of connections in your head that makes you feel like you're at home here. And then you're at home here and here. And the whole city starts to feel like home.
It's so interesting. There was a line in your film where you say, when you meet a person, you become much more interested in them. It's same with a city. And the idea of meeting the city mm-hmm. and really getting to know them by, I kind of could envision that as you walk, you talk to the city in a sort of
yeah.
communicative way.
Actually, just walking over here from the bus stop, I found this. I'll try to describe it on the radio. It's just like thin metal bristle, maybe 3 millimeters wide and like a foot long. And it's one of the bristles from a street sweeping truck, which, you know, they have these big circular cycling kind of broom things that sweep up the street as the street cleaning truck
yes,
goes along.
As you hold it up close, you realize how long it really is.
Yeah, so. And you see these all over New York. And I thought, oh, it's a New York thing. And then I started, once you see them, you start seeing them everywhere. And then every other city I go to, I start noticing them.
Well, let me invite our listeners to join this conversation. We're talking with Matt Green and Ricky Gates. Matt Green is 7 years into walking every block in all 5 boroughs of New York City. And Ricky Gates just finished running every street in San Francisco. And we're talking about how people don't really see much of the city they're in, and they see it anew, it sounds like, if you're walking it or running it. Maybe you've done some weird or similar kind of project that you want to share with Matt or Ricky, or just have questions or thoughts about what they're doing. You can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook, and you can tweet us at KQED Forum or email us at forum@kqed.org. I want to play one clip from your documentary, Matt Green. And just so our audience knows, you didn't, when you started this, there was no documentary plan. You just did this without any official like marketing or sponsorships.
Right. Just a super boring blog.
Super boring blog. Yeah. Which I imagine has really picked up in traffic.
I don't think it has. Okay. You're underestimating how boring it is.
Okay, well, here is a clip of your parents reacting to your decision.
When people ask us what he's doing, I normally tell them that he's very well educated, that he was a licensed engineer, but he didn't like it. You know, there was, I guess maybe in the very beginning, it was a little odd because their kids were all going off and finding jobs. But to me, he really is accomplishing something.
It might not have been our choice for what our son would have done, but he is happy doing what he's doing. It's his decision in his life.
I would like for him to make money doing it so he'd have a way to live.
So how are you living? I mean, it's 7 years. Mm-hmm. I know the film gets to this, but tell our listeners, how do you make this work? How do you finance it?
Yeah, this is another thing where like it seemed more manageable and it was going to be 2 years. And I probably wouldn't have thought I could do it if I knew it was going to be 7+. Basically, at the beginning, I had just been reading about this woman, Peace Pilgrim, who is too long a story to go into. But in the middle of the century, she was a 45-year-old woman, and she started this walk across America, basically gave up everything she had, every bit of money. She only had a couple things in her pockets. She made it across the country just on the kindness of strangers, did it again and again. The last 28 years of her life is what she's been doing. And so I was thinking about how can I make enough money to do this to afford an apartment? Like, how am I going to make this work? And then inspired by Peace Pilgrim, I was just like, you know, I won't have an apartment. I'll just live with different people, crash with friends. I'll meet strangers. And so that's the biggest component of it is not paying rent. I don't have an apartment. I never have to pay to live anywhere. And then as far as like food, transportation costs, health insurance, I make a little bit of money through my blog, through the few people who look at it, make some donations, and I could do a few talks here and there to make some money. And I have my money saved up from when I was an engineer, which I'm depleting slowly enough to get through it.
Well, I should tell people that you will appear for a Q&A session after the 7:30 p.m. showing of The World Before Your Feet at the Elmwood Theater in Berkeley on Saturday, and after the 4:15 p.m. show at the Rafael Theater in San Rafael on Sunday. Marianne says Telegraph Hill is her favorite place to walk in San Francisco. Ricky Gates, how did you approach choosing your route? I mean, you talked about cleanup miles and things like that, but I imagine there were complications you encountered in trying to decide how exactly you were going to run San Francisco.
Yeah, so this part of it is really quite funny, and I'm curious to hear Matt's methodology to
yes,
all of this as
because
well.
Because with Matt, you see him in cemeteries and in marshes and on piers.
Totally, yeah. So I was in Aspen, Colorado, my hometown, last year around this time, and I went up to the top of the mountain, which is kind of a community thing to do. And at the top of the mountain, a friend of mine that I'd grown up with, his name's Michael Odie. We were on the cross-country team together out here in Colorado, and I mentioned to him that I wanted to do this project of running every street in San Francisco, and time would be an issue. I would have to do it quite quickly and efficiently. And his eyes just lit up, and he said, "Ricky, this is what I do. This is graph theory, and that's called the Chinese postman theory or route inspection problem." And that should have been an indication to me at the time that I was dealing with a rather complicated math problem, but it wasn't any indication. And so I went into this project very ill prepared, but luckily Professor Odie created an algorithm, a computer program for me, which we tinkered with for almost the entirety of my project. I ended up only using it for Golden Gate Park and Treasure Island, but it was immensely entertaining to kind of see all of this unfold, where you take all of these areas, starting point and an end point, and just create the most efficient route to do all of them, and it incorporates your previous routes that you've done and streets that might not be streets, and on and on. So in doing that, I learned quite a lot about math, which I haven't really touched upon since I think high school, and exercised a part of my brain that has had some cobwebs around it.
Well, before Matt talk more about how he approached his route, which I'm imagining, I don't know if you have the same or have developed the same attention to detail in terms of grids, maps, math, but I want to just sneak in a call from Ida in San Francisco. Hi, Ida, or Ada.
Hi. I really appreciate the conversation that you guys are having. It's kind of random, but when I lived back east in Baltimore, Maryland, I didn't have a lot of money, and I walked a lot around the city, and I began seeing a lot of discarded Newport cigarette boxes. There's a history around the boxes, and I ended up doing my graduate thesis work around using the Newport cigarette box as a conduit to talk about the history of Muslims in America.
Wow.
By going back and looking at, actually in Maryland, there were some of the first prayers by Muslims made on tobacco plantations. And so walking really gave me a sense of openness and creativity that I probably wouldn't have received it unless I was like with the people living in that city and experiencing things that I saw and really contemplating. And I have a science background, but I'm also an artist, and I think it's a really great thing that I think more people should do is walk and experience where they're living and
yes.
where they are. So I really wanted to thank you guys for this conversation.
And your name is pronounced Ida or Ada?
Aida.
Aida. Great. Thank you. Thank you, Aida. Your point is actually making me think of asking our listeners what hidden treasures or things that would not have appeared to be a treasure before that you'd like to share on your runs or walks. And Matt Green.
Can I add something on
yes,
that?
Yes, please.
Just another little connection between cities. So in New York City, if you walk around and you look at the sewer inlet grates, you know, where the stormwater runs down from the street, you'll start noticing all these colored dots, these pairs of colored dots just spray painted on them. Almost looks kind of random. And after I'd seen these enough times, I was trying to figure out what in the world the deal is with these. And I eventually found out that they are basically marks left there to notate that stormwater inlet had been treated with insecticide to kill mosquitoes. And so then I became really interested in that, and you'd see the different patterns of them. And then at one of our movie screenings in New York, this guy in the audience, because this is mentioned in the movie, those dots, he was the guy who invented that system. And he was there in the audience, which was amazing to meet him. Or I had actually met him a couple times before, but I didn't know that's what he did. But then walking here today, again in San Francisco, I don't know if you've ever noticed this before. If you look at one of the storm drains in the street, you'll see on the curb right above it, there's like a multicolored spray paint dot. They're exactly overlapping, so it's just like layers of colors.
Yes.
And it's almost like these pastel spring kind of colors. So look, keep your eye out for that, and you'll start seeing it everywhere.
The detail that you're describing makes me wonder, do you ever get overwhelmed, like sensory overload as you're doing this? Because you must see and notice so much now.
Yeah, I think Ricky would probably agree that, you know, it's sensory overload all the time. And once you start seeing more details, you just realize you become more aware of how much you're not seeing all the time.
And it's not and that the fact that you're walking a street now and you've been walking for 7 years, but you really are only experiencing a snapshot in time on that street.
Absolutely.
And it could be very different now than it was
different
when
season,
walked it.
Different time of day.
So does that drive you nuts? Are you thinking, I've got to rewalk this,
no,
do this just, again?
It's actually beautiful.
Years.
It's a beautiful thing because it just
kidding.
Makes you totally surrender to it, though. You know, you realize like you're this tiny little speck of experience in this whole city, and it's almost meaningless in a way. But that just kind of makes you surrender to the city, which is a beautiful feeling.
Well, I would you say that you know, you do this in your film, you encounter a lot of people, too. You're interacting with the people on the street besides all these other things that are happening as you're walking down the street. But do you think this is something, and you're well-received for most of it, though occasionally I think, you know, people have some question marks about it. I wonder if this is something that you think a woman could do or even a black man could do that you have done and
yep.
still be received the same way.
Yeah.
Like, what other considerations they might need to have that you don't?
Right. In the film, you'll see this guy, Garnett Cadogan, who's he's a Jamaican guy, black guy, and he talks a little bit about his experience of walking around New York, and the you know, he has basically like a costume that he wears, that he kind of dresses up a little bit. He carries a book to, so he's always thinking about how can I appear non-threatening? And, you know, I actually just met a woman yesterday who is, who's walking every block of San Francisco. Her name's Patricia Hewitt. And we didn't get to spend that much time together yesterday, so I didn't get to ask her too much about that. But it, you know, would obviously be a different thing for a woman who's has to think about safety and you know, what other people's motives are more than a male would, I think.
Well, let's go to Bill in San Francisco. Hi, Bill.
Phil.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I was born and raised in San Francisco. I still live here. And I worked for the post office for 42 years. I walked and drove, delivered every neighborhood, every zip code. And the thing that shocked me the most, and I want their opinion, was I thought I was poor. I saw the super, super poor.
Yes.
And then what really shocked me is the super, super rich.
Yes.
That blew my mind. Because I never really left my neighborhood in Glen Park.
Phil.
Back in the 50s and 60s.
And you still live there?
No, I live in the Sunset now.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm so glad you brought that up because, Ricky Gates, I feel like this is something I heard you talk about in an interview in Running San Francisco about how stratified economically the city is really having a profound effect on you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was something that I thought about going into this. And then you have no choice, as Matt was saying earlier, you know, when you're doing every single street in a place, you're seeing absolutely everything. You're going down alleyways that people purposefully do not go down, and other people purposefully go down because they know that other people don't go down there. And it's a good place to set up a tent or to spend a week or 2 weeks kind of hassle-free. In San Francisco, and I would assume that it's probably pretty similar in New York and most cities around the country and around the world, I found it to be particularly true in San Francisco, primarily because of the geography. I think that when you have hills, steep hills, it creates its own stratification of wealth. But in San Francisco in particular, you get a great sense of that, you know, the higher up on the hill that you go, the more money you need to have to live there.
Yes.
And there's a bit of irony to this, in San Francisco, the public housing projects, a lot of them are built on hillsides in, somewhat undesirable locations, or I should say they were undesirable, 50 or 60 years ago when they were built. And now they're becoming very, they're worth a lot of money. And a place like San Francisco that's being changed so rapidly from tech and money, you're just seeing the wealth encroach in on these areas. I look at these things and I think about them. I don't necessarily come up with a solution. For me, the most important part right now is to acknowledge it and to confront it and to encourage other people to do the same. And then we start to look at a solution.
I'd like, just as a follow-up, Ricky, thanks for saying that, to respond to Nathan, who actually was curious about how you dealt with the smoke during the fire, since that would have happened while you were on your run. Did you have any lasting effects from running during them, he wants to know. And then he also asks quickly, how did you deal with chafing?
Two very, very good questions. So I'll deal with the chafing one first. That was almost immediate. There's a great product out there called Squirrel's Nut Butter. It's the perfect solution, coconut-based solution for these sort of things.
How is it on sandwiches, Ricky?
Yeah, don't try that.
Things never got that desperate. And then for the smoke was really interesting. It was so I started on the 1st of November. I believe the campfire started on the 7th or 8th yes. of November, and lasted about the smoke in the city lasted about 10 days. And anyone in San Francisco during that time can certainly attest to the change in mood throughout the entire city, if not the entire state. There was also the fire in Southern California raging right. at the time as well. I used a face mask during that entire time. I kept my mileage up for the most part, still doing about 30 miles a day.
Wow.
I wasn't doing, my miles weren't so fast. I wasn't going at such a fast pace that the respiratory, that I wasn't taking sharp, deep breaths. So in that sense, I wasn't too worried about the lasting effects of it. What was important to me is during that time that I was just kind of, and for lack of a better word, I'm going to call it solidarity. It was important to me to be out there with everybody else that was out there experiencing the same thing and getting a sense of the atmosphere around me. And it was something else. I mean, you know, I don't have the exact number. I think 60 or 70 people lost their lives. It's a natural disaster, borderline natural disaster, and something that we have to confront in the years and decades ahead.
Yes, we fear there will be more of, for sure. Let me see if I can just squeeze Brenda in from San Francisco very quickly before the end of the segment. Brenda, quickly, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm really enjoying this conversation, for one, but I had a task of putting posters on, or posts for a developer, on all the buildings in the radius of either 500 feet or 1,000 feet last year when it was, anyways, it was in the Bayview. And it's a neighborhood that I'm marginally familiar with, but...
But just by that simple act, you must have really gotten to know it.
Well, I did, and the fascinating thing was to just see the architecture, for one, and the other, the different places that are nestled in, and especially in Bayview, how it's changing. So between the old churches that really are like several, sometimes in each block, there were breweries and, you know, like tasting bars and stuff like that that you would encounter as I go through my route.
I thank you for sharing that, and I'm sorry to have to cut you off just because we're so close to the end of the show, but I just wanted to ask Matt Green to leave us with any thoughts about people who might be interested in starting this, or just, I don't know, anything that you feel like is often a message you want to leave people with about your own experience.
Yeah, I think just the act of walking every street in a place is a great thing because it gets you in all these different places you wouldn't otherwise go, and you just start learning so much about your home. And it just makes you feel so much more at home there and so much more connected with it all.
Stuart is a listener who wrote that he did something similar in San Francisco, running every street, and he ends his comment with, "Oh, the things you'll see." Matt Green, he will appear. You will see Matt Green at 7:30 p.m. at Elmore Theater in Berkeley on Saturday and at 4:15 at the Rafael Theater in San Rafael on Sunday. Thanks, Matt Green.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ricky Gates.
Good to meet
thanks
you,
for
Ricky.
Having me on the show. Nice
and
to meet you, too.
Thanks to our listeners. Have a great weekend. Get out there and walk.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.